Actually, Maharaj, this I was reading the life of Baruch Spinoza. So it seems that he had a lot of problem with the established Jewish
The
church, maybe.
tradition, yes. He was from the tradition of Judaism, but he became a, what do you call a not a heretic of some type. Then?
He was expelled.
Yes.
He was ex so now I'm just a little confused because when I read his philosophy, it seems that he said, I mean, some say he's a pantheist, some say he's panentheist. So, but when I read one of his statements, then he says, God is not only the world, but he's also in the world.
Yes.
So this is some transcendental conception. So it seems that he had some panentheist or kind of idea,
What's that?
but a panentheist type of idea, panentheistic. He was not only a pantheist, but he was also a panentheist. I mean, it's not incorrect to say that.
Who said? You're saying.
I mean, no, some say he's just a pantheist.
Some people say that he's a pantheist. You say he's a panentheist.
No, I don't say that.
They
And some
say he
say he's
may be a
also.
panentheist. Then, what's the question? What is
So the
he?
question is that. No. Question is that when I read about his, what to say, opposition to the Jewish, synagogue, that there is no God or there is no such personality of God or something like that. But when he establishes such concepts, then I'm just a little thinking, what he really was.
Yes. Hegel said that he is an acosmist. An acosmist. You know what an acosmist means?
Yeah, you explained earlier, Maharaj.
An acosmist
Means
means
he.
there is no world.
Yeah.
There is no world. How can he be a pantheist? Or how can he be a panentheist if there is no world?
Yeah.
He said the only substance, the only real substance, what he called the absolute substance, the real substance, is the absolute.
Yeah.
Everything else is merely an appearance, an accident.
Yeah. The idea of res completa, Maharaj. Res completa.
Res completa. Well, he said substance is sui generis. Sui generis means it generates itself from itself. It's cause of
Yeah.
its, it's translated as the cause of itself. Substance is the cause of itself. What's anything else that is caused by something other than itself is not its,
Yeah.
is not, has no reality in itself, is not substantial in itself, because it's the cause by something else. Its existence, its being, resides in something other than itself. And the cause of
Yeah.
that thing, if it's something other than itself, then that thing that is causing it is the real substance. And
Yeah.
what is
Yeah.
caused becomes an effect. The effect and the cause. The
Yeah.
cause is something other than the effect. Then the effect is only an appearance of the cause. It is only a result that comes from the cause. And so if the cause is nothing of this world, that this there's
Yeah.
nothing in this world that is the cause of itself, everything in this world is caused by something other than itself,
Yes.
right? Then what is that other for everything? That other is the absolute, which is its own cause. It's an absolutely necessary being that is the cause of itself. That can be the only true reality. So in that sense, he's an
Yeah.
acosmist. He's an acosmist. That all the
Right.
whole cosmos is an
So.
appearance. It doesn't have its reality in
Yeah.
itself. It has its reality in the absolute. And so only the absolute is real.
Yeah. So, Marat. Yeah.
Then,
Yeah.
what do you call that?
Yeah, that is not world, that is a substance.
That's
Means
the
this is
absolute
the
truth. That is called the absolute
absolute
truth.
truth.
That's what we believe in. We
Yeah.
believe that. We believe
So,
Spinoza,
so.
but Spinoza's difficulty, what Hegel rejected, and
Yeah.
we also reject. is that he's defining the absolute as substance. Substance means what causes the cause of itself and has no other cause outside of itself. All those things that have a cause outside themselves, they are accidents or appearances of substance. An appearance seems to have reality. But if it's the appearance of something else, the sweetness of sugar. Sweetness has no existence on its own. Is there anything like sweetness on its own? That's no substance. Sweetness is not a substance on its own. The sweetness comes from the sugar, right? The sugar has the sweetness. But sweetness itself is not the sugar. You see? Sugar is there, but the sweetness is a property of this. Appears to us. Another creature might find the sugar is not sweet. He might find it tastes bitter to him because of the chemicals in his tongue. Maybe appear differently. But anyhow, the sugar is there. It's the real thing. And everything else is just the appearance of that. So like that. The absolute is the substance, the real thing. And everything else coming out from it, all the effects that it causes, are merely the appearances of that thing. But those appearances are not mere things. They are also part of the absolute. That's the thing. Anyhow. But Spinoza thought was that this about substance. Substance, therefore, doesn't have any thinking in itself. All thinking about substance comes from finite beings, our thinking. We can think about the substance, the absolute. We can think about the absolute and give it determinations. Its determinations, what the absolute is, comes from the thinking of the finite persons. All right? So this was Hegel said this is the defect of Spinoza's theory. He believed that there is thinking and that the thinking was the thinking of the finite beings. That thinking, because the absolute is there, that thinking also comes from the absolute, but it doesn't it's not a thinking about itself. The absolute doesn't have any power to think itself. It only has power to create finite thinking beings who can make determinations about it. Understand? So he accepted there's thinking, and just like Descartes said, there are two types of substances. There's res cogitans and res extensis. So he thought thinking and space, spatial extension, these are two what he called modes of the absolute. These are the modes. So this mode of thinking and this mode of space or being, these are two modes of the absolute. But the absolute itself, even though these things come from the absolute itself does not think itself. It requires something outside of itself in order to think what it is. Here Hegel was complaining. Wait a minute. If the absolute can produce a thinking being, why can't it think on its own for itself? Why does it have to have something else think for it? If the thing can be the cause of itself, why can't it think for itself? This cause of itself is called in itself. What the thing is in itself and what the thing is for itself. Spinoza left that out. That the absolute is not only in itself, its own cause, but it's also for itself. Its own thinking of itself, its own self-determining. It determines itself. It can determine itself. Yeah. It has its own thinking capacity. God is not dumb. He can think also. And not only that we can think, he can also think. And this is where Spinoza left off the personal aspect of God, because without being able to think, that God is only substance. It's only when God can think himself that he becomes subject. So Hegel said, no, Spinoza was wrong. I was right in saying that this is the absolute substance. This is correct, cause of himself. This is the proper definition. This is the being in itself of the absolute, being by itself. Had no other reason, no other reason for his existence but itself. But he was missing this for itself. That he is also, that absolute can also determine himself. He is conscious, he is self-conscious. And this, therefore, the absolute must, to properly define absolute, he must be for himself and in himself, both. And reality is by itself and for itself. And here we have the full conception of the absolute. And everything else coming from that, that is a mere appearance, the mere effect of the original cause, mere appearance. So finite beings are there. They're not that we don't say they're not there. Sure, if something is appearing in such a way, that appearance belongs to that thing. It's not that the appearance is some kind of pure illusion. No, if something appears, that means those determinations are there within the absolute. The sweetness of the sugar, it must be there in some way in the sugar. And not that the sweetness is just an appearance, but the sweetness doesn't have any substantial being on its own because it's a property. Property means it has its being in something other than itself. Understand?
Yeah.
Appearance has it doesn't have being in itself, but it has its being in, and that which is causing the appearance.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the real being of things is not in themselves, but in God or in the absolute. That is their actual being. That is their actual identity. Yeah. Therefore, the living entity, he has no being on his own. He has no substantiality on his own. His substantiality, his identity is in God. He is in God, and this call is this identity in God that we have is that we are the servant of God. That's our identity. We are in God, but we're in God as a subordinate part, a finite part.
Yeah.
So we have our identity there in God, but as subordinate serving parts, existence. We serve the absolute. That is our true identity. And jivara swarupoi krishnair nityadas.
Yes, Maharaj.
So Spinoza can't be called either pantheist or panentheist. He is a cosmos. So far as the world is concerned, is a cosmos. But he has understood properly the absolute as substance that causes itself. We can accept this much. And a very important conclusion he made. Very important conclusion. And Hegel praised him as you have to become first a Spinozan before you can understand real
philosophy. He said that he says that if you are a philosopher, either you are a Spinozist or you are not a philosopher. So Maharaj, there is one thing that is there. So actually I got some of these ideas from one of the books that I was reading from this Madhva tradition. So there they are saying the Western tradition has tried to rely too much on the concept of appearances, but in the system of Madhva he has developed the conception of the real. It means what is appearing is also real. So that means, for example, if you say, like in Shankara's system, something is real if it is valid in all times and in all circumstances, only then it is real. But in Madhava's system, he has established something which is existing for even some time, if it has existence, that is already real. So then he distinguished the different types of reals. There is one real which is the independent real, and all other reals are dependent reals. With this idea of independence, he brought out the concept of the world.
It's not a very clear idea that he's giving. We understand what he means, but isn't it really not precise? Okay? Really not precise from a very strict philosophical point of view. We can't say that the finite is real. He wants to emphasize that the finite is there. We should not eliminate the finite and only become monists. That's why he's speaking like that. When he holds up the two fingers, he gives equal importance to both the infinite and the finite. But this is just his way of preaching, to counter the monistic the teachings of Shankaracharya. But from a finer perspective, the finite has the same reality as the infinite. It can't. Can't have the same reality. Rather, the finite is a moment of the infinite, and it's in its reality. To think of the finite as having a reality on its own, this is false. Its reality is found in the infinite only.
That he's,
That makes the finite not real, but ideal. It's ideal. What's that?
No, that idea, I think that he is not concluding in that way. I mean, he
emphasized it like that. As I'm saying, he wanted to counter the monistic thought that only the everything falls into the one.
Like he establishes the concept of identity in difference, for example.
Where does he do that?
Yes, Maharaj. He has a concept called the vishesha. When we say the property, the attribute, and the substance, so if we say they are identical or they are different, then none of these actually serves. I didn't read the fully, but it means that there is some kind of rigorous involved, and sometimes it becomes like absurd. So the only way is that there is an internal relation, or that means that there is an identity difference between the attribute and the substance.
Right.
So through that it can be understood.
Yes, okay. I'm sure he understood properly, but what you were saying before, he may have said simply to emphasize the difference, because people are not so smart. It's hard for them to understand these things.
The other conception that I really got from was that when people say that Madhava was a dualist, that is just outside conception. Really, it seems that he was not a dualist, but he just his philosophy in such a way that people understand that, you know, this,
yes, that there is finite and there is infinite. They're both infinite and finite. But how to understand that relationship, that is the problem. Anyhow, like I said, his main power of his presentation was to distinguish the monists from the Vaishnavas. He wanted to defeat this monism, which all is one. So in order to do that, he had to introduce the other, the one and the other. And however he had to do that, he did it. And he would leave it to the future to work out the details, which Ramanuja was able to do in a little bit more sophisticated way.
Yeah. But with respect to Ramanuja also, there is a question that is there that they have asked, that in the idea of the Ramanuja, there is some kind of intra-organic concept. That means, which will imply that the finite will affect the infinite, absolute. But in reality, the infinite is independent. He cannot be affected by the idea of the finite, the changes in the finite. So therefore, there has to be some higher concept involved to solve that problem. So from there, he given this idea of his idea of independence, rather. Independence of the God. I mean, that means the independent reality and dependent reality distinguish the truth in this way.
Vishishtadvait.
Vishishtadvait means it is some kind of a
qualified monism. Qualified monism means the absolute, the monist, the absolute, the one, has qualities.
Yeah.
Now, the point is, these qualities, where are they coming from? Are they coming from the absolute, his own self-determination? Or they are qualities that are attributed to the absolute by the finite thinking soul? Does the soul give the absolute its qualities by its own determinations of it? Or does the absolute give its own qualities by its own self-determination? That's the question.
Yes.
That has to be answered.
Yes.
How Ramanuja answered that, I'm not sure. But I'm sure he wanted to say that the absolute is its own self-determining, gives itself the determining quality. If that's the case, then the qualities, the qualitative differences, do not affect the absolute, but the absolute affects or determines his own qualities.
Yeah.
You understand?
Yes, ma'am.
If the absolute is self-determining, then whatever determinations or qualities he has, he's giving them to himself. If, however, the qualities are determined by the infinite, by the finite persons, then certainly the absolute will be influenced. Okay? So it's a matter of deciding where the determinations of the absolute, the Advaita, is coming from. And Advaita always means a negation of duality.
Yeah.
And never a oneness. Of course, some people interpret it as ekatvatma. That is one.
Yeah.
But Advaita, the word itself, means it implies negation of the duality.
Yeah.
So duality is there, intrinsic to the absolute. And Advaita philosophy is there. Can't be denied. But it's there in a negated form.
Yeah.
Means the differences are brought back into unity by a movement of negation.
Yes.
That is God's being for himself. That negation, negative being of the absolute, Advaita, means that God is for himself, or the absolute is for itself. That is the meaning of that negation. Whatever is for him, that is negated. It is there, it is other than him. In order to be for him, there must be him and the other. And the negation of that is to bring that other back into himself. To be for himself. Yeah. To be for himself. That for means it is for him. He takes possession of it. It doesn't have an independent existence on its own. It is taken back as his possession. It is mine. That's like when I say my house and my house. That house is for me and not for you and not for anybody else.
Yeah.
Right? It means the house is taken possession of by the owner.
Yeah.
It doesn't have an independent existence on its own that anybody can go there and take it. It's already owned. No one else can claim ownership of it. So this being for its being for the owner, this being for the absolute, this being for God, negates the independence of that thing, that otherness. Negates, isn't it? Doesn't allow it to have any and every connection with anyone. It only has a particular connection with him. What is called negation. Has no independent existence anymore.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Maharaj.
All right. What else?
Anything? This was... Yeah, now I will also study this, you know, life of Leibniz a little bit, because I think it is important after this, because Leibniz met Spinoza a few times.
They
had some discussion.
He like Madhva, Leibniz. He believes everything has its own existence. The one has its existence and the many have their existence. That's why he called them monads. There's the monism and there's the monads. They all have some meaning. Just like your fingers all have the sequel equal significance. There are many monads. Which one is a monad in its own self? But they all belong to the hand nonetheless. And they all belong to the hand.
Yeah. I'm just thinking, Maharaj, I got some, you know, idea. I want to write one article on Vedanta at least. But I just think that how I will write. This book gives a very nice, you know, way of writing.
What book is this?
This is, you know, the book is called... No, I'm not talking about the content of the book. I'm just telling the... it's called The Philosophy of Sri Madhvacharya by B.N.K. Sharma. So it gives first two things, the ontology and then the epistemology. These two are established first. Then he establishes the world of experience, the world of the soul, the doctrine of the soul, then doctrine of Brahma, and then the method of, you know, practice. So I'm just thinking, if we also present something like this, the first we establish our ontology. What are the basic ontology and how to know the things.
Very good.
And then we develop the idea of the world of experience, the soul which is experiencing it.
Very nice. Will
be the next deduction.
Very nice. Yeah, you can do that.
And then...
That'll be very good.
Yeah, some attempt I want to make.
Is that book in English?
It's in English.
Alright.
I mean, I don't want to, do what he's writing, because we are the followers of Mahaprabhu. But at the same time, you know, this...
You can compare what we are saying, what Madhvacharya is saying, what Ramanuja, Leibniz, anyone. We can compare.
Yes, Yeah.
Show the defect, show the advantage.
Yeah. Yes, Maharaj. Yeah, I'm just, a lot of, you know, ideas are coming, Maharaj, but actually I have no time to write. But I think that, you know, now slowly I'm just feeling that, you know, I don't want to do anything else except my, you know, service, that is, you know, collecting of funds and meeting people. And in the evening, I just want to do this type of works because I'm not getting time otherwise. You know, sometimes I was
your so-called work will give you the fertilization necessary to do your writing. You know, experience is a very important part of the idea. Essential to any idea that we have is the experience. This is Hegel's idea. Hegel's philosophy requires experience. To experience the world is necessary to have the alternative. The negative is very important in order to get the idea, the ultimate idea, properly. Otherwise, it becomes a mere abstraction.
I meant, Maharaj, actually I wasted a lot of time in past because sometimes I was...
because you're only concerned with the ideal. Now you are having the experience of the ideal and it will become more concrete to you.
Huh? Yeah, I feel...
You will be able to articulate it in detail now because you have the experience of the ideal in practice.
Yeah, earlier I was reading your, you know, write-ups, and I was not able to understand, you know, what do you mean by identity and difference.
Yes.
You're telling in one place, you're telling, it looks like very, you know, a simple thing, but actually when I was looking at it, I was thinking it's not a simple thing.
Yes.
That, you know, you are saying identity and difference does not mean identity and difference, or identity or difference. It means identity in difference.
Yes.
It is something connected with the very unity of the subject and object.
Yes.
Something of internal relation.
As I'm explaining,
the
finite has its existence in the absolute, in what is other than itself. The finite and the absolute are two; they are different. But the identity is there in that the finite has its identity, its being, in the absolute only. That makes the finite appearance. It has no being in itself. It has no identity in itself. But it has its identity or its being in something other than itself.
Yeah.
This is the idea of identity indifference.
Yeah.
Understand? Has no independent identity. That
kind
of thing is merely an appearance of something else. By that idea of what has no identity in itself, we can understand the significance of appearance. The sweetness of the sugar... And no, sweetness has no identity in itself. It's of the sugar. We can't forget the of. We overlook the of. We think the sweetness and we think the sugar, and we don't think of. Sweetness of the sugar. That of is a very important word. Saying that the sweetness is not there on its own. It's the sweetness of the sugar.
It is nothing external to it.
It's external, but it's different from it. But is not separate from it.
Yeah.
Sweetness is not the sugar. We'll all agree to that. It's different from the sugar. That means, but is not separate from the sugar.
Yeah.
The sweetness and the sugar are not separated. And they're distinct, but they're not separate. Mm.
So that's why they are identity in relation.
They're not separate. It has its being in the sugar.
Yeah.
Its identity is there. Identity means its being, what it is.
Yeah, like we can say sweetness. I mean, like we can say the sugar is sweet, the apple is sweet, the pineapple is sweet. So this sweetness becomes a predicate to different substances in this way. But at the same time, when we talk about the sugar itself, then every time the sugar is only sweet. So in that sense, there is some identity between the what we see as a property and which it inheres. So in that sense...
Sweetness is a universal. Sugar is a singular.
Yeah.
Huh? Sweetness is universal. Yes. The apple, the sugar, this, that, the other thing are sweet. Sweetness can be applied universally to so many things.
Yeah.
But the thing itself is a singular. The singular, the apple is a singular, the sugar is a singular.
Yeah.
And but the sweetness is a universal.
Yeah.
So we're combining a universal with a singular.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then this is the distinction between them. The universal and singular is the distinction between them.
Yeah.
However, we're identifying them also.
Huh? Yeah.
When you say red,
yeah.
Red, the apple is red. Is the red different from the apple?
No.
Yes and no.
Different, yeah. But
red
not
is
separate.
Universal. Red is universal. The yeah. apple is red. Ah, your lips are red. But
yeah.
the red is not as different from the apple, no doubt. The red is universal. Yeah. The apple, the lips, whatever it may be, are singulars.
Yeah.
At the same time, the universal is not completely separate from whatever, what it instantiates. The instantiation of red in the apple is an instantiation of the universal. So the apple, we can, in a certain extent, as its redness exists in the universal, and the universal exists in the and is singular. So they're not completely separate, distinct but not separate. They exist in one another.
Yeah, the universal instance shares the particular, so there is some relation.
Of course, it's an instance of the universal.
Yeah.
They call it instantiation or instance.
So we can call them as these ideas as self relations, self concepts. Can we call like that? Internal differences are the. I mean this. Of course, I understood this part that red is different from, let's say, the apple. But at the same time, in that the red is instant. I mean, the universal instantiates in this case as an apple. So this is an example. But actually, if we see apple, then cherry, then so many fruits, at the same time red, sweetness as properties. Now we see in any instant change, in any particular instance, we see these things are not separate. They are co-inhering. So therefore, what we see is that we cannot see any attributes without any instantiation at the same time. So that means what we see as the substance or the thing in itself, and its attributes, their relations are some kind of a let's say not externally imposed, but something internally as a concept can be. I mean, how can we separate, say, the red from the apple at all? We cannot do that. But at the same time, the red is not the apple.
Why not? You can have green apples.
No, but when we take an apple, that apple is red. So that redness is
not all apples are red.
Say a particular apple, which is red.
Okay.
So we cannot take it out. Of course, a jar is white. We can make it red. But a natural apple.
No, actually, red is not something that can, that is not removable from apple. It's not an essential quality. The essential and unessential qualities. Red is not essential to being an apple.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So there's that distinction then, essential and non-essential. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Maharaj. I took much time from you.
Maharaj, Santa Maharaj, did you go to sleep?
Actually, I wanted to know something, Maharaj, how this Spinoza could have this doubt.
How this what?
Spinoza had this doubt that Absolute cannot think of himself.
Yes. He didn't have a doubt. He didn't think of it. He didn't consider that the Absolute can think itself because he was an impersonalist. Judaism is impersonalism, you know, as it's practiced in my most Jews. Of course, Judaism in itself is personal. But he was considering it from an impersonal point of view. That is substance. And he got this from Spinoza, from Descartes. Everyone was trying to imitate Descartes. Spinoza, Kant, all of them. They all got their ideas from Descartes. Descartes' idea, cogito, the cogito means I think. And from Descartes onwards, everyone was believing in the I think. I think, I think, I think is everything. I am everything. I thinking is creating everything. This was that Descartes also inherited this conception from Descartes. Therefore, his only understanding of the absolute was coming from the I think. His, whatever the absolute was, it was dependent upon what I think. What the I think was saying about it. The Absolute could not think itself. The Absolute wasn't an I, only I, the finite are eyes. But Hegel, even Kant, is also coming down from Descartes. He was only thinking of the I, the unity of our perception, I think. And the Absolute, whatever the Absolute was, it's only, its identity was dependent upon what I think. But the Absolute has its own I, has its own ego, has its own self, and he can think what he wants and determine himself, and he even determines us. And that's what Spinoza was missing. Understand?
Yes, Maharaj. Actually, I was thinking when, you know, Hegel thought about this, before that, you know, that Spinoza never thought about, you know, this aspect.
No.
That is, you know, considering.
No. He was following that line of thought that was coming from Descartes.
But Descartes was a Christian, no, Maharaj?
They were Christians, but they could not understand how the Absolute could think itself. They could not understand that. Because they were so hypnotized, mesmerized by the I think. They could not get out of that. They cannot get out of that, that
monism
fixed conception of the self. What's that?
How this monism ever came in the West? Means in India we know it is Shankaracharya.
There's a long history. A long history of that. I can't go into that. Long story.
Maharaj, I mean, when you are speaking, I'm just feeling mesmerized. So, I mean, how you learned so many things so nicely, Maharaj. It is coming as an experience to you, not as some, you know, like you are trying to think something and then telling something. No. It's like, you know, your being is like that.
I studied these things, thought about them.
Maharaj, when you started having these clear ideas, I mean, from the beginning, from the time you met Sulasadhar Maharaj, or
gradually, gradually it came. Gradually it came through the influence of Srila Prabhupada and the teachings of Sridhar Maharaj. I got some idea also of Govinda Maharaj, everyone contributing
wonderful
to our formation. Our spiritual formation is coming from all of them.
Yeah.
I can't minimize the influence of any of them. Because what we are is created from them. And their ideas have given us the inspiration to go in a particular direction. Otherwise, we are just wandering. We have so many ideas are coming, but we are bewildered by them more than and them helping us. They bewilder us. But some impulse is coming from the direction of Gurudev that gives formation, proper formation, order and organization to those ideas. And around that inspiration crystallizes the whole conception. And if it's in conformity with that which they have given, we understand it to be the true thing. And we become convinced in that.
If I had not been under you and in your association, then I could not have even begun to study these books.
No, that won't be possible because we need that crystallizing unity.
Yeah.
We need it. That's the inspiration that comes from Guru. That's very essential for us.
I feel so happy, Maharaj, that, you know, by some unknown, some kind of mercy of the Lord, we were connected with you. We are hearing these nectarian words, and it is giving us so much life. And, you know, when we are going to some universities, colleges, we're feeling every day, you know, that we are able to, you know, face the situation, although it is very difficult. But now we don't feel it difficult. It is like possible. And plus so much more that is, you know, coming, you know, that we feel confident to engage in that, you know, spirit. So I think that was not possible otherwise.
Yes.
I mean,
Guru Maharaj used to say, you are the entrepreneurs and Guru is the capitalist. You, in order to do your business, you need to have some capital. So you have to come to the capitalist. They'll get the capital that you can do your business.
Yeah.
So our Gurudev is the capitalist. He has all the money.
Yeah.
And we are borrowing from him in order to run our business, run our life.
It is extraordinary, Maharaj.
Maharaj, one student today, BTech student, was telling, actually he was talking with Muni Maharaj, he was telling that your examples and your ideas are seems to be, you know, not so practical. You know, world has changed so much in 1,000 years. So, you know, we have to see the lifestyle of present time and we have to be practical. He was telling like, so then I asked him that you are studying, I think, mining. So what is the practical application of this mining in your own life? I asked him. Then he was thinking for, you know, five minutes. What is the practical application of mining in his own life? Then I told, okay, then, you know, you're studying this mining, then what you will do after this? And what is the, you know, use in your life, this mining? Again, I asked. Then he's thinking, I will earn some money. So after all, you are studying this mining for, this is your practical application. I asked that, you know, you may die next day. You're not thinking about that practical application, I asked him. Then, yes, you know, I have to think about these things, you know. Then we asked questions. And he was thinking that we are impractical. Then we established that he is impractical, what his way of, you know, doing, you know, leading life.
Very good. Very nice.
Actually, they are thinking, you know, so much they are getting, you know, this teaching of just, you know, going for this, you know, some name and fame and money. And that is everything.
Guru Maharaj gave the example of electricity. Benjamin Franklin, I think it was.
Yes,
Benjamin
yes.
Franklin discovered electricity. And he was giving some lectures on electricity. And one lady asked him, what is the benefit of this electricity? So you have discovered, what is the benefit? Then he answered her, well then, what is the benefit of a baby? But the benefit of the baby is that when he grows up, he will be something very, very important. And the same thing, what is the benefit of electricity? This world would not be what it is without electricity. Has become so important. In the beginning, it was there. Nothing was running by electricity. Then he was thinking, what's the benefit of it? You see? It is only known in its maturity. What is that thing? In its nascent form, cannot be understood. only in this developed form. A seed, a tiny thing, the seed. Put it in the ground and you'll see what it becomes. Become a giant, what do they call that tree? The giant tree. Ashwatthama, what do they call that tree?
Asastha.
Huh?
Ashwattham.
Yes, but what is it in English?
Tokyo.
Banyan tree.
Banyan tree. Huh? From the seed, not very significant. And in the growing, and the growth of that seed, then we can see how significant it is. You are just getting the seed for you. This is elementary. We are giving you the most nascent, for you a nascent thing, a beginning thing. What the result is, you cannot see at present. But in the end, it will take over the whole of your life, whole of your existence.
What we see in IITs, people are, you know, joining for a job and getting one car and, you know, happily driving the car and getting some projects and end of the month some money, and that's it. Their whole life is that much. They're not, you know, able to think, you know, beyond that.
Polished animals. I call them polished animals. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. I like the animals, but they do it in a sophisticated way.
Yes.
They are very sophisticated animals, polished animals.
I feel so sad, you know, sometimes, you know, seeing their attitude, actually. You know, how much they are, you know, into this type of, you know, deep ignorance. So, we are trying, you know, but few are only coming. But we see that most of them are, you know, very much absorbed in that, you know, false way of living life.
Samahatma Sadurlapa.